This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hi, everybody. McGraw-Milhaven here, host of America at Night. Tune in each and every weeknight for late-night conversation. We'll have interesting guests, informative conversations from people who have been there and have done that. Plus, we always have time for you, the listener, because we love late-night conversations. Be sure to tune in every weeknight from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. for the next America at Night with me, McGraw-Milhaven, right here on KCNR 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, your talk radio station.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
That's something that parents can do for their children, to really take the time to understand what they think and why they think it, and then really talk to them and teach them through conversation.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That was Dr. Kathleen O'Toole, Associate Vice President for K-12 Education at Hillsdale College. We'll talk with her today about how citizenship starts in the classroom. And later in today's program, Dr. Marty Billman from Hillsdale's Chemistry Department will tell us all about the discovery of fire. First, we're joined by Dr. Kathleen O'Toole. She's Associate Vice President for K-12 Education here at Hillsdale College. Dr. O'Toole, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here, Scott. Thank you.
You've also written an essay over at The American Mind recently. Citizenship starts in the classroom. Why is it necessary to proactively teach our youth how to be good citizens?
They're going to be citizens. They are citizens, and they are going to be voting citizens. But more than that, they're citizens of the United States of America. And the thing about the United States of America is the sovereignty lies with the people, and the people are charged fundamentally, therefore, with the success or failure of the country. It is in their hands, it is in our hands, to ensure that this place prospers and continues. And that's a heavy burden that you have to get ready for.
You mentioned that many students today are trained in what's called action civics, and it's a phrase that a handful of guests have talked about on the show in recent months. And this is the idea that protest is the highest form of civic participation. Why do you think that action civics actually is perhaps a disservice to the students themselves?
Yeah, when I think about action civics, I think about, I used to be a headmaster of a classical school. And we used to go to it was in Austin, Texas, and we used to go to the Texas State Capitol on School Choice Day.
Mm-hmm.
There were a whole bunch of other charter schools there too. And you could tell a lot about the schools by what they did at the Capitol on School Choice Day. Some schools would go in and like learn about the history of Texas and observe the architecture of the building and then go talk to their state rep or something. And some of them would just march around with signs.
Yeah.
That's action civics. Yeah, it's the idea that there's a kind of an assertion, a sort of angry assertion of your rights, of your opinion, that's central to civic participation. Although perhaps that it is necessary at some points, you wouldn't really start there. You would start probably by seeking to understand. And with America, there's a lot to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a big complex country with a history that is worth knowing, and then it was designed in a particular way. And you have to understand both of those things, the history of America and the architecture of the Constitution, in order to kind of get what makes the place go, how are decisions made. And so I suggest in the piece, you know, a better way to prepare students for civic participation would be, number one, teach them about the nature and history of the American regime.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, give them the habits of healthy civic participation and disagreement. And I think that the action civics approach kind of assumes that the other side is A, your enemy, and B, can't be reasoned with. And we don't want to start there.
Yeah. I want to come back to the idea about disagreement in a moment. But in the essay, Citizenship Starts in the Classroom, Dr. Kathleen O'Toole, you observe that many students in arguments lack any evidence to support their confidence in an opinion that they state. They can't necessarily defend a position. As our education system generally replaced in ways how to learn or how to think with learning what to feel?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. I've been teaching this year, and in the past I've been a teacher primarily of like 10th, 11th, and 12th graders. And people that age love to debate.
Mm-hmm.
They're at a phase in life where they're, you know, more capable than they've ever been before. They're starting to feel really attached to their opinions, and they would really just like to have an argument.
Mm-hmm. Even with friends, right? That's the neat thing. I remember back when I was that age long ago, you'd fight with friends. You'd argue with friends about anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember being this age, and you kind of think you've got it all figured out. And you do more than you ever have before. But, so they want to debate. And one of the things that we do in classical schools is teach students, how do you know, first of all, what's the difference between having an opinion and really knowing?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know that your opinion is true? And in order to really debate effectively, you have to know what you're talking about. And often when you take a 16, 17, or 18-year-old through the process of understanding why they believe what they believe, trying to ground it in actual knowledge and reality, you discover that they're representing someone else's opinion, or they've always thought this and never really thought to question it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really, really important thing to do as a teacher. And it's a really important thing for people that age to go through so that they understand when to fight with conviction, when to defend their beliefs with conviction, and when to allow themselves to be persuaded of an alternative.
Now, you write in this essay that for many teenagers, they're actually now afraid to disagree with each other. Why has that disagreement become so hard?
Yeah, it's a funny thing with that age, because at the same, they can be very certain of their opinions on the one hand, and also take it very personally
mm-hmm.
when they're disagreed with. And sometimes they're even hesitant to be the disagreeer
mm-hmm.
because they think that disagreeing with someone's opinion means indicting their character or impugning their intelligence or something. And so it's really important in the classroom, and we do this through seminar discussion, to create a place where disagreement is healthy and teach them kind of explicitly how you disagree with someone without calling them a liar, or calling them a terrible person.
Dr. Kathleen O'Toole is with us, Associate Vice President for K-12 Education at Hillsdale College, also writing Citizenship Starts in the Classroom over at The American Mind. You mentioned that you're in the classroom teaching a philosophy course now to 11th graders. In a good seminar, a Socratic seminar, the teacher will step back, allow students to lead the conversation. What skills do students start to develop when that happens in the classroom?
It's really fun to watch. In a good seminar, and we've started to have them now. We're in the spring, and so we've been doing this for a while, and so we're getting good at it. Initially, we were not very good at it
mm-hmm.
because we wanted to have debates. The students wanted to have debates. They would very easily get off track. And, you know, at first, seminar seems like it's kind of a free-for-all. You don't have to sit and be quiet while the teacher talks. You get to say what you think, and so mm-hmm. they can be a little wild and crazy to start. But if you lead it right, and we've worked on this all year, and so it's going well, they can learn to really figure things out for themselves without the assistance of the teacher. So there are two rules in seminar. One is speak to the person who just spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is speak only about the text. And then to guide the discussion, there's a seminar question. And the seminar question is always based on a specific reading. This is a philosophy class, but it works really well in literature class. Sometimes it can work in history too, or other subjects. And the first person who speaks in seminar is in charge of restating the seminar question and then venturing an answer to it. And you can participate in seminar as a student in a variety of ways. Sometimes you might have an answer based on the text, but sometimes it's a complicated question and it takes a lot of interpretation and you might not have an answer right away. And that's okay. You can contribute to the discussion by asking a question that follows from the original question. And if the students start behaving that way, then what happens over the course of the conversation, which usually lasts the class period, is you sort of build the students themselves with the teacher on the side, build a kind of robust answer to something complicated, and they do it together.
We will continue in a moment with Dr. Kathleen O'Toole, Associate Vice President for K-12 Education here at Hillsdale College. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Premier Oil Change is celebrating 20 years of our friendly oil changes. A lot has changed in 20 years, but our commitment to fast, friendly, excellent service has remained the same. To celebrate our 20th birthday, we're offering $20 off any oil change. All you have to do is go to our website at premieroilchange.com and receive your gift. In Reading, check out our new location at 905 East Cypress. Discount also available at our Lake Boulevard, Anderson, and Palisadro locations.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Hear ye, good folk. You are cordially invited to the Shasta Renaissance and Fantasy Fair Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Sunday, May 24th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Anderson Fairgrounds at 1890 Briggs Street. Watch knights fight for their honor in armored combat. Enjoy lively Celtic and folk music. Feast like royalty and shop handcrafted treasures from artisans far and wide. Tickets are just $17 for adults, $15 for youth, 11 to 17, and kids 10 and under get in free. Get yours now at Eventbrite and skip the lines. The Shasta Renaissance and Fantasy Fair Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Sunday, May 24th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Anderson Fairgrounds. Huzzah!
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. More with Dr. Kathleen O'Toole in just a moment. First, I want to invite you to follow us and never miss a new episode of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Do it via Spotify, via Apple Podcasts, or via YouTube. Click subscribe and you'll get an alert every time there's a new episode of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow us today. Subscribe for new episodes and always great guests and information. Talking with Dr. Kathleen O'Toole. She's Assistant Provost for K-12 Education here at Hillsdale College. Her essay, Citizenship Starts in the Classroom, can be found at The American Mind. Dr. O'Toole.
It's hard to change one's mind. It's hard to admit that you are wrong or even that you're seeing something in a different way when you do encounter new facts or different arguments. Is there a way to make that process easier to handle?
Well, I try to do it as I try to show them that I do it. Mm-hmm. And I do it all the time. We're reading Aristotle right now. We're finishing Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics today in class, actually. So our recent seminars have been about friendship and justice. And those are complicated and important things to figure out. And some of the students in the class are really strong, and they've actually pointed to passages that and offered interpretations of them that I didn't initially see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, oh my gosh, great point. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And once, you know, the first time you do that, they're like, oh my gosh, who is this teacher who didn't understand, you know? But if you do it enough and if you basically know what you're doing, then they start learning. Intelligent people are still trying to figure things out, mm-hmm. especially something like Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. And so you just sort of make it, you model it. If a student does it in class, if a student says, oh, I've changed my mind about this, I make sure to call that out and compliment them for doing that
mm-hmm.
in a natural way. I mean, there's a way to do it that actually makes it awkward. But if you do it in a natural way, and if you sort of praise them and comment on it when they have learned something in public, then it becomes, with consistency and time, it becomes natural to them.
I will not forget in class when a student taught me a better way of teaching something.
Yeah.
And I, of course, said it at the time, and I've said it to future classes. We were talking about the newly important equal time provisions of the FCC in my journalism classes. And one of the carve-outs is for a bona fide news interview. And I was talking about and trying to explain. And the student said, well, bona fide means good faith. Well, yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense. That's even better than the way I was explaining it, because that's exactly the way the FCC sort of interprets that. It has to be a good faith interview. And I think that's perfect. So
yeah.
I have to give credit now in the future that student helped me teach that particular point in class.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a few of them. There are a few of them in 11th grade that teach me stuff
mm-hmm.
weekly. And that's cool. That's like the most delightful thing ever as
yeah.
a teacher.
Dr. Kathleen O'Toole with us for a few more minutes, Associate Vice President for K-12 Education here at Hillsdale College. You described these classroom discussions as a training ground for citizenship. How does debating Plato or Shakespeare prepare someone for civic life?
Well, it teaches you two things. It teaches you to really mean what you say. That's something you learn in classical schools. Before you speak, you should think about what you're going to say. You should make a plan about how to say it. And you should confirm in your own mind that it's really a representation of what you think.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't happen only in seminar. It happens through the entirety of your education, really. So that's the first thing. Mean what you say and say it in a way that captures what you truly believe or truly think. And then allow yourself to be persuaded of something that is true, even though it may not be what you initially thought. And I think as a citizen, if you can do those two things, articulate your own thoughts well, and then allow yourself to be persuaded by the truth, even if the truth comes from someone on the other side, that's pretty much all you can ask for. Mm-hmm. That's the best preparation for citizenship. There's the best preparation for the habits of citizenship, I will say. You also, as we said previously, need to know a lot
mm-hmm.
as an American citizen. But the habits of debate, of disagreement, of persuasion, and of just sort of simply stating things clearly and accurately. Those are all really formed well in a good seminar.
if we had more students who were comfortable with disagreement, grounded in ideas, what might that change about our larger political culture?
Well, it's not rocket science to say that things escalate really quickly. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to politics these days, and that's true of politics in general, things escalate really quickly. But the people in our history who have been able to see us through a crisis have not been the people who escalate quickly. They've been the people who can think deeply and persuade effectively and see where we ought to go. And so as a citizen or as a leader, you want to be that kind of person. Mm-hmm. You want to be someone who can see what's going on. And that means remaining lucid, remaining calm, not jumping into the fray in battle mode right away. As I say, sometimes maybe that is going to be necessary, but you wouldn't start there. You would start by trying to understand and trying to persuade.
For our listeners who might not have children in the classroom anymore, are there particular ways that perhaps we can help model this in our everyday life and interactions?
I think parents can do the same thing that we do as teachers. Cultivate the habit of saying exactly what you mean, thinking about what you want to say before you say it. Asking questions is really a very important part of classical teaching, and it's just more important as a parent, mm-hmm. I think. And then taking the time to explain yourself. When my daughter was born, she was just a tiny baby, and my father said to me, "You must take her seriously." And what he meant by that is she's going to have ideas, and her ideas will be kind of silly, mm-hmm. you know, when she's little, and she does have ideas, and sometimes they are kind of silly, but it's really important to listen to her and really talk to her and not dismiss her baby talk, you know. And so that's something that parents can do for their children, to really take the time to understand what they think and why they think it, and then really talk to them and teach them through conversation.
Dr. Kathleen O'Toole is Associate Vice President for K-12 Education at Hillsdale College, also the writer, author of Citizenship Starts in the Classroom, an essay over at The American Mind. Dr. Kathleen O'Toole, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
While we have a moment, I want to say hello and thank you for tuning in to our listeners at affiliates all across the country, including at AM 930, The Answer, also at FM 93.7 in San Antonio, Texas, at 1240 AM, 101.1 FM and 98.9 FM, WTON in Virginia, and in the Catskills in Hudson Valley, 92.5 FM, 94.9 FM, and 1240 AM, the voice of Sullivan and the Catskills, WVOS. Thanks for tuning in to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Up next, Dr. Marty Billman is back on the program in her Drama in Scientific Discovery series. Wouldn't you like to know about the discovery of fire? Dr. Billman fills us in next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Hey, it's Scott.
Hey, Chili, why are you so excited?
Yeah, our biggest deal of the year is rocking.
Kelvin, you don't seem as excited. What's up?
I guess all good things have to come to an end. And that cost ends April 30th. So that's kind of tough.
It's okay, Kelvin. We can always help people.
Well, yes, but it's just this at cost program is one good deal. And I love helping people get more out of their money, like the old days.
Kelvin, did they even have AC when you were my age? Sorry about that.
Anyway, here's to hoping we can help as many people as possible before April 30th.
At cost pricing, only from Redding Heating and Air. This month only through April 30th. Visit reddingheatingair.com. Old fashioned service. Modern day solutions.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
Now, as I've been predicting, thanks to the work of our president, it appears your interest rates are finally on the way down. How will that affect you? Well, I'm joined by Josh Barker with Josh Barker Real Estate.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
What do you think about the great news? What does that mean for the sellers that you're working with?
You know, Sean, I think that the biggest thing is this, is that as interest rates go down, it serves as gravity to value. So as rates go down, the value of homes goes up. And as those rates go up, the value of homes goes down. So as we watch rates going down in the future, we could expect that the asset value of real estate is going to start to go up. So the question is, do you sell now or do you sell later? Do you buy now or you buy later? I would say either way, as long as you're in the market, you're going to receive the benefit.
All right. Thanks for keeping us up to date. Talk to the only agent in town I recommend. Go online to readinghomes.com. That's Reading, R-E-D-D-I-N-G, homes.com, or just Google Josh Barker. That's Josh Barker, and then you can start packing.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Hi, this is Carrie Grawl. This season marks a new chapter for Organic Pilates, a rebirth of sorts in a new, larger downtown space. Alongside it, we want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created as a natural extension of how we move and live with intention. We want to invite you in. Harmony and Organic Pilates, now open in downtown Reading. We're located at 1264 California Street in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to see you.
Word of college students writing papers, but it's not a word either. Just say thus. English is an ever-evolving language, and things change over time. Just pick up a copy of Chaucer if you aren't sure how much they've changed. When in doubt about whether a commonly used word is acceptable, consult a dictionary. This can also help you judge whether the word is formal enough to be used in print. That's your Grammar Minute. Visit thegrammarminute.com for more tips and tricks.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to follow us on X for updated show and guest information. We're at Hillsdale Radio and the podcast network at HC Podcasts. We're joined by Dr. Marty Billman. She is Associate Professor of Chemistry here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Billman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Scott. Happy to be back.
It is good to have you back. And we continue in the series we call Drama in Scientific Discovery. And today, the discovery of fire
yes.
is going to be explosive. Definitions first. What is fire?
Yes. So fire, right, one of those great mysteries when in our of our youth, and we're like, what is it? What's it made of? And the actual answer, and I always frame it from like, sadly, it's kind of disappointing. We want it to be more magical than what it is. But it really is just heat and light that's a byproduct of a chemical reaction. I know. It would be great if it was like, oh, this, right, the great gift from Prometheus given to us or some type of like metaphysical alchemical element, but it is kind of just a byproduct of a chemical reaction. And that doesn't mean it's less beautiful. Obviously, it still is. You know, as someone who's been studying combustion for a while, it's one of my favorite reactions. And even to this day, when folks are like, oh, I'm sure you got into chemistry because you love explosions and fire. And I'm like, that you're not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but that really is kind of all it is. As long as you have a fuel and oxygen gas and some kind of spark to get them going, the reaction will progress. You end up creating water, creating carbon dioxide, and of course, that lovely fire as a byproduct.
Yes. All right. So who discovered that?
Okay. That's a hard question to pin down, because unlike some scientific discoveries where there's, you know, one gentleman or lady who had this eureka moment, the discovery of fire kind of, like what it truly is, this combustion reaction kind of spans, you know, around 100 to 200-ish years, which that's kind of also what I want to come in and talk about, the folks who made this discovery through the era. So we're going to start with like Robert Boyle, Robert Hooke, aforementioned scientists from the last time that I came in. Then we're going to move into, Johann Becker and George Stahl, namely their, let's say, confusing and since debunked theory of how combustion worked. And then we're going to reel the meat of like our part two conversation is going to be kind of the culmination of, okay, but now we're actually going to figure out what fire is. We're going to have two competing theories, two competing scientists who are spearheading these theories, and we're going to walk through the drama there.
All right. So let's start at the top. Who were Robert Boyle and Hooke?
Okay. So previously, we had discussed that Robert Boyle, Robert Hooke had invented the vacuum pump. They had discovered what's known as Boyle's law. So pressure and volume of gases are kind of inversely related in terms of their magnitude. But the real kicker was that as the vacuum pump was a new invention, Robert Boyle, as well as his assistant Hooke, I say assistant, they really were more like peers, but
yeah,
Boyle had the money. He commissioned Hooke to make the pump. Hooke was more of the engineer of the two of them, but still, they wanted to figure out what the elements were made of. One of their experiments was putting, you know, something like a candle inside of the vacuum pump. And as a reminder, their original hypothesis was that the fire should get larger.
Right.
Yeah, since there was less space or less stuff competing in the space, let's say, and instead the fire went out and they were like, well, that's weird. The discovery of that was definitely in opposition to what alchemy had predicted at the time. As a reminder, also alchemy was kind of the forefront of all chemical theory and understanding. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, well, turns out alchemy is not real and we have to figure out what's going on with all of this.
So why bring them up now?
Ah, yes. So, of course, their experimentation did not end with the discovery that fire gets snuffed out in a vacuum. They were like, well, let's continue poking at this. So what they kind of, one of the things that they tried next was, well, can we ignite something in the vacuum? Maybe the vacuum just puts something out, but we could still light it in the vacuum. We're going to try and ignite something. The way that they did this was quite ingenious, right? Because if you're in a vacuum, it's not like you can stick your hand inside of the container. Being Robert Boyle, had designed this sort of mechanism where there's sort of a platform up on top in this like glass bell jar that would hold some type of, you know, like wood chips or pieces of paper, some type of like really easily like tinder combustible material. And at the base of the vacuum chamber would be like a red hot piece of iron, like something that, you know, we know outside of the vacuum chamber, if you were to place the like paper on top of it, it would ignite.
Yes, immediately.
Yeah. And what he found was inside of the vacuum chamber, when the little platform was jostled and the combustible material was dropped onto the red hot iron, again, in vacuo, nothing ignited. It just kind of sat there. Didn't even smolder, right? So that's, I'm sure it would be weird to look at. He also then found, okay, well, if it's not igniting in the vacuum, what if we open, you know, the little, we call it a stopcock, to let the air, like, flow back in. And as soon as the air came back into the chamber, whoosh, the whole thing ignited.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so big conclusion was not only is fire not a distinct element, which they had discovered previously, but also it seems that in order for fire to happen, you need air. Right, so it's not even right that fire is not an independent element, but it seems that it is directly dependent on a different
right,
like alchemic element, air, in order for fire to even happen.
So what about Robert Hooke's role?
All right, so Robert Hooke, again, was the one who designed the vacuum pump in the first place and was a man of his own genius. And so he decided to set up his own kind of separate experiments outside of the vacuum pump since, you know, Robert Boyle had commissioned the vacuum pump and that was his little toy. Robert Hooke could have made his own, but he wanted to test something else. So one of his notable experiments is that he set up like an iron box, not in vacuum, just a regular old big iron box. And inside of this box, he placed a bunch of like smoldering charcoal kind of on a bed of sand and then sealed up the box. It wasn't completely sealed though. There was like a hole for like an old bellows, you know, like old, fireplace bellows.
Yeah.
And on occasion he would like pump the bellows to keep the air moving inside of this box and kept this experiment going like in the sealed kind of container up until the charcoal embers kind of went out. Now, I did say the box was not, like, sealed. It wasn't technically like a closed system, but it was as close as they could get back in the 1600s when these gentlemen were working.
Mm-hmm.
And so his kind of conclusions from this, eventually the charcoals did smother. They did eventually go out. But what he found was that the weight of the box did not change.
Mm-hmm.
So what this told him, again, because it was as closed of an environment as he could get, right? So in his brain, it was like, it's a closed system. So he said, okay. So fire is not only the byproduct of some type of chemical reaction. So actually in publishing, he didn't use the term chemical reaction, but kind of the old 1600s equivalent of that, kind of so close to it. And he's like, not only that is air required, but some kind of air is also released. So we have now reactants and products and actual, like, before and after, and the fire itself is just a byproduct. So this is the first record, at least in, you know, Western academia, yeah, of the theory of combustion.
So the Roberts, these guys, they figured it out, right? That's it? Problem solved?
Wouldn't that be great? So, yes, we did have a theory of combustion, and I, of course, did just say a couple of minutes ago that, oh, cool, we have demonstrated through Robert Boyle's experiments with the vacuum pump that fire is not an independent element, therefore alchemy is wrong. But as we also know, not only now, but as was true then, it takes a long time for people to change their mind on things. So unfortunately, those who practiced alchemy continued to practice alchemy, either despite the new information, or we kind of have to remember this is the mid-1600s, mm-hmm, and it takes a lot more time for information, like actual solid scientific information, to get around.
Right.
And not only that, but if, you can imagine you're a member of the educated aristocracy, you are more likely to hear this information versus the uneducated lower classes had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So we have essentially, like, in the upper echelons of those who are educated, this better understanding of what's happening. But even amongst them, there's contention because people don't let ideas die, even bad ideas.
Yes.
So we're now at this stage of history where there are a bunch of competing theories. And sadly, the Roberts' theories of combustion is just kind of one of them. Now, of course, because it had scientific evidence in support of it, like empirical, repeatable evidence, it did start picking up traction,
mm-hmm,
but unfortunately, there of all of the other incorrect theories was kind of one that spearheaded or was, like, you know, the chosen theory of the competing alchemists, and it kind of stuck around for another 250 years. I guess, like, technically we're 50 years into this theory already having existed, but it would stick around for another 200 after this. Mm.
Back in a moment with Dr. Marty Billman, Associate Professor of Chemistry here at Hillsdale College, as we continue on our journey through the discovery of fire. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Looking to grow your business locally? Get your message heard loud and clear on KCNR Radio, serving all of Shasta County. Whether you run a small business, a local service, or have an event that needs buzz, KCNR's trusted hosts and loyal audience can help your brand stand out. Affordable packages, custom ads, and a voice that delivers results. Advertise smart, advertise local, advertise with KCNR Radio. Visit KCNR1460.com or call 530-605-4565.
Shasta Lake and neighboring friends, the Queen of Dragons has your back with premium products at prices that work for you. As the longest standing dispensary in the area, our local team knows exactly what you need. Our shelves are stocked with the freshest flower in town. From our premium, fresh, and local line to our budget-friendly options featuring Emerald Junkies and Tricana Boys. Don't miss our famous Flower Friday deals. Top quality at unbeatable prices. And for the green thumbs out there, clones are now in store for the growing season. Join our Dragons Reward program and earn points with every purchase. Stop by 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake or call us for delivery at 530-276-9771 or check out our menu at thequeenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons, premium offerings, unbeatable value just for you.
The Shasta College Art Gallery presents a Japanese woodblock print exhibition featuring works from the traditional ukiyo-e period to contemporary artists. Explore beautifully crafted prints with many pieces available for purchase to support Shasta College Student Show Awards. Join us for the closing reception on April 16th at noon in Building 300 during Shasta College Cultural Day. The gallery is open Monday through Thursday 8 to 5 and Fridays 8 to noon. More information can be found at shastacollege.edu/events.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Join us for the Chicks and Chaps fundraiser luncheon Saturday, May 2nd at the Reading Senior Center from 10:30 to 2:30 with special guest speakers Dr. Allen and Dr. Sockfield. Don't miss your chance for an exhilarating ride on Wreck-It Ralph and a chance to bid on a one-of-a-kind Chicks and Chaps belt buckle. Get your tickets today at readingrodeo.com. Just click on the Chicks and Chaps tab. Thank you to our sponsors Reading Rancheria, Valor Oncology, Gold Mark Jewelers, Dignity Health, Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, Four Winds Jewelry, and this radio station.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Dr. Marty Billman from Hillsdale's Chemistry Department continues with us on our Drama in Scientific Discovery series, The Discovery of Fire. Dr. Billman, what is this alternative theory that's sticking around?
All right, so kind of keep in the back of your mind that what I'm about to talk about is going to sound maybe far-fetched and out there and inconsistent, and that's because it is. Again, this is a defunct theory. This is not true. This theory is known as the phlogiston theory. Now, phlogiston was a piece of like alchemic understanding. Again, that kind of predated the Roberts' discoveries with fire. So essentially what the alchemists had done was kind of picked this older theory and kind of like zhuzhed it up, kind of reframed it around what is combustion and what is fire. So this phlogiston theory, again, kind of dating back in its earliest forms to 1606, refers to the material kind of being burned away and in the process releasing what is known as phlogiston. So essentially, like the alchemist or this competing theory said, well, the answer to what is fire, fire is phlogiston. What does that mean? It kind of depends on who you ask. It was not a very consistent theory. And the phlogiston itself, which would oftentimes be represented by Greek letter phi, was, some folks said it was the fire. Some people said it was the essence of fire. So kind of the property of flammability.
Mm-hmm.
The one kind of reason why this, though, theory of all of the kind of competing since debunked theories reigned supreme is it did work, quote unquote work, to explain another type of chemistry, which back in the day they called calcination. Now we call this like oxidation, kind of the rusting process.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So like, right, iron turns to rust. Well, the phlogiston theory folks explained that process also with phlogiston, yay, because it seemed as though, I know, it seemed as though, though, like, in order to get fire, you would take a, you know, combustible material, like a piece of wood, heat it up, and then fire comes out. And it's like, that fire is the phlogiston. In order to get iron to rust, heat would sometimes also be employed. And it's not just iron to rust, right? But we can think also zinc turning to like zinc oxide,
sure,
or tin going to tin. There are many reasons why you would actually want some of these like oxide materials. And again, they didn't know they were oxide materials. They would call them the calcified versions of these metals. But if you would heat it up, like heat up this type of metal, and then you would see it corrode, well, what must be leaving the iron is the phlogiston, and what's left behind is the calcified version.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, this esoteric property of if you heat it up and there's a change, the change happens because phlogiston's released.
So did this Robert Eglin come up with phlogiston theory?
Right, yes. So Robert Eglin being the one who had originally written phlogiston theory in the early 1600s, kind of, again, picked this like kind of concept of phlogiston from early alchemy and was like, we can use it to explain a whole bunch of stuff. But as the 1600s continued to progress, especially once we get to around the point when Roberts, Boyle, and Hooke were working, so mid-1600s, there were two additional gentlemen. First, Johann Becker, published his text known as the Physicae Sub Terranae in 1669. They loved their Latin back then. I mean, we still do, but we tried to not publish our textbooks using Latin anymore so people can understand what it is. So in this book, though, Johann Becker defined the five alchemical elements aligned with the newest observation. So fire was out, right? It's like, oh, it's not that alchemy is wrong. It's that we just learned that fire is not an independent element. So we have to define what the elements actually are based on what our current understanding is. So the five new elements were air, as that seemed to be required for fire. They're like, right. Air must be independent. Water, its own thing. And then there were three different types of earth that they named. I'm just going to stick with the translated names. I'm not going to go into the original Latin. But we have the inflammable earths. So those would be, you know, like your woods or tinder, things that can burn. We have the mercurial earth, which is actually just the element of mercury.
Mm-hmm.
It was a weird little guy, right? Maybe I should come back and talk about, like, the weirdness of mercury at some point. As well as vitreous or life. So the elements of life, kind of like there was their way of understanding, like, whatever made up you and me clearly must be different than what makes up the inorganic or the inflammable types of things.
Talking with Marty Billman from Hillsdale's chemistry department about the discovery of fire. Dr. Billman, now, there are responses to interactions with Becker's theory of five elements. Tell us more about that.
So now we're kind of picking up with, okay, well, now we have this combustion theory from the Robertses, Johann Becker being the one who's like, no, alchemy is still real, guys. We just have to adjust our thinking. And we will kind of progress through the timeline a little bit. George Stahl also wanted to prove this kind of new perspective from Becker that there are five elements, and these are the five elements. And so first, I'm not going to go into a ton of detail on these experiments, but essentially what he wanted to do was start with what he assumed to be pure phlogiston. And so, of course, I'm just going to out of the gate say he was using a lot of circular reasoning here,
because
he's like, we're going to assume that pure charcoal is phlogiston. And we're going to use this understanding to derive each of these other five elements. And look, guys, we did it. Phlogiston theory is right. So since air was required to burn charcoal, they're like, so that's why air is an independent element. Because water could put the fire out and stop the reaction. It was like, oh, that's a separate element. The inflammable earths, like charcoal, or I should say again, charcoal was being defined as phlogiston. So charcoal is a bad example, like wood, you know. And then, of course, like once the wood is burned, you have like essentially charcoal left over. So it's like, yes, there's the phlogiston. And then, you know, the other elements as well. So it's like he tried to connect each one of these things to a specific type of chemical reaction to charcoal and was like, all right, look, we figured it out. These are the five elements. Here are five reactions that prove it. And phlogiston is real. And it's like, okay, but phlogiston is real because you said it was charcoal,
which
it's not. And also didn't agree with a bunch of the other pro-phlogiston folks anyway. But regardless, he ended up publishing some results, and, you know, because anytime something's published, it's like, oh, it must be real. If it's published, it's real, which, of course, is not necessarily true, and that's why we have at least the best kind of fail-safe we have nowadays is, like, peer review,
right?
So this would not be peer-reviewed today.
Not likely.
No. But, yeah, so we've got a... Yeah, again, Robert Eglin kind of coming up with phlogiston theory, and just like any other scientific theory, it's kind of being modified throughout time in order to fit with the data that was being gathered.
So could phlogiston theory be considered as a theory of combustion today? In other words, were all these scientists saying the same thing and didn't realize it?
No. Almost, but no. So their big flaw really... I'm going to say this with kind of historical, you know, perspective now looking back.
Sure.
Were their egos. Because phlogiston theory had started from the alchemic perspective, and the theory of combustion, as presented by Roberts, Boyle, and Hooke, was anti-alchemy. It was almost as though those who originated in the alchemical field could not see how these things overlapped. That they were almost like staunchly opposed to the idea of like their phlogiston theory having anything to do with the combustion theory. So there were multiple points in history, one of which will be one that we talk about, where it's like they're so close. They're so close to actually just getting to the theory of combustion. But because ultimately the phlogiston theory was founded or predicated on the notion that phlogiston had to exist, that's really where everything ends up falling apart, because phlogiston doesn't exist. It's and even amongst their own camp, the, you know, scholars, philosophers, whatever, who who thought that phlogiston was real, they couldn't agree on what it was. They all just said it had to exist. And so as long as they agreed that it existed, phlogiston theory could stick around in whatever shape or form it took, but it never actually got to what combustion theory is. And the biggest kind of reason why is ultimately if phlogiston exists, then air is not actually like a required component for chemical reaction or for the combustion reaction, which we know it is.
Right.
So one could almost say, well, if they just said, well, what if the phlogiston was the oxygen, right? Then it works. And it's like, well, some phlogiston folks said like, well, the phlogiston is produced by the chemical reaction, right? It's the fire. And some then would say, oh, well, it's the heat and the light then, right? And it's like, no, it's not actually a thing. It's like the essence of the thing, right? So like, as soon as you tried to pin them down or bridge that gap, they essentially, like, on the historic record would say, no, you're misunderstanding me. You're not understanding what this phlogiston theory is. Again, some claimed it was the fire itself. Some said it wasn't the fire. It's because all of these inconsistencies, they just consistently hand waved away. It was a real muck of 100 years.
We're going to pause here, and when we pick up next time, there'll be another big discovery that helps us down the path a bit. Dr. Marty Billman, Associate Professor of Chemistry here at Hillsdale College. Drama in scientific discovery. We talk about the discovery of fire. Dr. Billman, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much, and I hope to, well, be listened to in part two.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Kathleen O'Toole and also Dr. Marty Billman from here at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR has teamed up with Michelle Slade from My Umbrella Marketing to give you a chance to win tickets to the Red Bluff Roundup. The drawing is at 8 a.m. on Friday, April 10th. For your chance to qualify, all you have to do is listen for this.
Hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out,
ride 'em in, raw.
Then call 530-605-4566 or 530-605-4567 for your chance to qualify to win two tickets to the Red Bluff Roundup. The drawing is at 8 a.m. on Friday, April 10th, courtesy of Michelle Slade from My Umbrella Marketing and your friends here at KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With our slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Thank you.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and I Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio. Find out what's happening in our town, our community, and our nation. That's Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m. right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.